Hello, hello, hello. Well, happy last Tuesday in May, and welcome to yet another edition of That Showbiz with Chuck Darrow. And you know where I'm going with this. The Philadelphia market's only regularly scheduled radio program dedicated exclusively to entertainment, the arts, dining, fun in all its various shapes and forms. And thank you for joining us today. I hope you all had a safe and happy Memorial Day weekend. The weather, for the most part, did not cooperate, but, you know, you can make your fun anywhere. You don't need good weather to have fun. I remember the first time I ever went away without my parents, Memorial Day weekend, 1973. And me and my buddies went and got a hotel room in Atlantic City. And I'll never forget when we hit the boardwalk that Friday evening, that old copper tone suntan oil sign on the boardwalk at Million Dollar Pier, where now we're the playground at Caesars and all are. And they had the temperature reading, digital temperature. And the moment that we hit the boardwalk and saw that sign, it was 46 degrees and it was raining. And you would think, well, there goes the weekend. But you know what? It was one of the magical weekends of my life. So weather is not important when it comes to fun. That's my words of wisdom for today. Anyway, here's some more words of wisdom. Tonight at the, I assume it's the Academy of Music. I'm pretty sure it's the Academy of Music. Where else would it be? The Motown, the musical, opens I think in the intro I say 2 weeks, I think it's more like 12 days, but it opens a 12-day run, and of course it's the touring version of the hit Broadway musical, which is a catalog musical, and tells the story of how Motown Records came to be, and all the great acts, Supremes and Stevie Wonder and Smokey Robinson and Marvin Gaye and yada yada. So in honor of that, we decided to devote our guest segment today to the history of Motown Records. And to kind of help us along with that, we're going to be talking to a gentleman named Alan Rawls, who is a board member and trustee there at the Motown Museum, which is actually located in the building that housed Motown Records, both the offices, the business offices, and the recording studios and rehearsal rooms and everything. And so he's going to talk about the museum and what you can see if you go there, and some pretty amazing expansion plans. So that's how we decided to mark the opening, the return of Motown the musical. It was here, I want to say, the winter of 2015. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's when it was here. It might have been 14, and it was a good show. So you should check it out. If you're a Motown fan, there's no question that you should check it out. And while we're waiting for Neil Zurin to call, and there's a chance that he's had some things today kind of distracting him, so I don't know if he's actually coming. Hopefully he will, but if he doesn't, that's okay too. So while we're waiting for Neil to call and kick things off, I can tell you about another jukebox musical, as they're called, that is now appearing, I guess, actually through July 16th. And that is Saturday Night Fever, the musical, which is at the Walnut Street Theater. And let me preface my review by saying that I believe, and I've felt this ever since I actually became the theater critic at the Daily News back in January of 2013, when, and I was for three full years. But the point is that one of the things I learned on that beat was that the Walnut Street Theater, they don't do touring shows. They produce from scratch their own musicals, and they always do a slam bang job. They do such impressive work all the way through. I can name so many musicals I've seen. How to succeed in business without really trying. A Christmas Story, even 9 to 5, which I didn't particularly care for the show itself, but the production was just marvelous. Maybe my favorite, High Society, the Cole Porter musical, which they did, I guess, in the fall of 15. And they just do such superb work. And then along comes Saturday Night Fever, which is just so brutally, brutally bad. I mean, I it's fun to write. I got a little journalism secret here. Writing a bad review is infinitely more fun than writing a positive and good review, because you can really be nasty and surly and clever. But I'm sorry when I see something that's bad. But if I see something that's bad, I am bound by my obligations to my job and my readership. And we're talking now, I'm going to plug in for my Philly voice Com, also called that Showbiz, which runs, we don't do it the same day every week, but usually by Thursday afternoon or so, it is up and running. Sometimes it'll be out on a Wednesday morning, but each week you can find, and this is last week's column was my review. It is just so, so, so bad every which way. This movie should have never been made. The only reason to make this into that movie, which was not a bad movie. I mean, I was always in the disco suck school of thought. But the movie, I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was well done. But it was dramatic. It was a drama. It had dramatic heft. There were serious issues discussed. Drug abuse, religion, and people, you know, when people lose their faith. And also, there was a whole subplot about the racial animosity between Tony Manero and his Italian friends and African-American kids in Brooklyn. And all of this is just obliterated in the worst possible way. The songs are used as musicals. Songs and musicals are used to propel or explain things in the show, and the songs simply do not work. So do yourself a favor, save it. Even if you're a big fan, go and watch the movie again. Do not go see this. Now, it's only fair to me to say, though, that said, that that the people opening night, last Wednesday night, the audience for the most part loved the show. I have no idea why. I will never understand why. But it's only fair to point out, as I did in my review, that, yeah, the paying customers by and large seem to love this thing. I'm not going to make any comments about what that may mean about those people, but if you have any sense of taste, and this, you know, and what's the word? Discretion? Is that the word? I guess artistic discretion. Stay as far away from the Wall Street Theater through July 16th as you possibly can do that. And just let me remind you, again, that you can read me in the Philly Voice every week, phillyvoice.com, that's Showbiz. And there is an archive. If you go to the homepage, scroll all the way down to the bottom, you'll see a link to staff/contributors. Scroll down to me and click on if you want to read all my columns there. I think they're worth reading. Most of them are anyway. I would think so. Also want to remind you guys, you can always like us on Facebook, this radio show, and that's Showbiz Radio on Facebook. So please like us and let us know what you think about that. And as I suspected, it doesn't look like our buddy Neil Zurin is going to be joining us today, which is fine because I sort of thought that might be the case. I know he's got some things going on and they're much more important than anything to do with this radio show. So that is fine with me. So, you know, if Ken Allen has called in, so, you know, I'm sure Kenny and I can stretch out a little today. I'm sure you won't mind that. What do you say, Ken?
Hey, how's it going, bro?
Oh, it's going okay. So what do you say? You want to just hold on till your assigned time spot, or you want to do it now and go right through to for next 10 minutes or so, which I know will go by pretty quickly.
Let's let it roll today.
Let it roll. Exactly. Today. Hey, I like that. Let the good times roll. That's catchy. You feel free to use that.
Thank you.
No, to coin a phrase. Anyway, so are we eating? Are we traveling? Are we discussing larger issues, dining issues? What's on the agenda? And if you want to talk about Portland for a couple minutes, you know, I just got back from there, so we can do that because I know you were there. So your call.
Yeah.
It is your 10 minutes, so fire away.
Well, thanks. How does this sound? Let's start off with some tips today. I've got some good travel tips for you today.
Great.
Hopefully they're good. And then if we have some remaining time, I'd love to hear about Portland.
Okay.
Because I know you were out there recently, like you said, you did some dining.
Oh, my God. I want to hear all that. Awesome dining. Yes.
Yeah. It's a cool city.
Okay, so let's start with your tips.
All right. So, you know, I've talked before about tips on tipping and just restaurants in general. So let's switch to hotels.
Okay.
You know, it's summertime now just about, and people are traveling more than ever before. And there's a real art to staying at hotels and receiving perks and upgrades and discounts and things like that. And I find that when I talk to people, a lot of folks don't always take advantage of what's out there for them.
Can I interject? Because I speak personally, sure. But I suspect that perhaps I speak for others, that I always have assumed that you have to be, you know, a frequent flyer, as it were. That if I just stay at a hotel, like the hotel I stayed in Portland for 3 nights, you know, that's not enough to get me any, and it's a Marriott. So, I mean, you know. Up, and there is Neil. Neil is on the phone. Okay. So, we'll kind of.
Good night.
Yeah. No. We'll give you a couple minutes. We'll just talk about that, and then we'll give Neil a couple of minutes to do his thing since
okay.
he called
Sounds
in.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, I'm glad he's able to join you.
Yes.
But you're right. It is very similar to an airline rewards program. But even so, even if you're only staying at a hotel like a Marriott just once, I still recommend to join their frequent guest program. It's better that you do than you don't, because that's what they're looking for. And they don't know that you're not going to continually stay with them. So it's like accruing dividends. You can get points towards discounts and upgrades. But let's say even if you don't do that, Chuck, what I recommend when you're booking a hotel is, instead of calling the 800 number, to call the actual hotel that you want to stay at directly. If they have a reservationist who's on site, that person is going to be more apt to give you discounts and such than an 800 number person would, because the person who's there in front of you sees what's happening on hotels.com and all these other travel sites that really aggregate different travelers and things like that, and they can give you those same types of discounts and or even better. A lot of times they have their own competitive rates that can go against those hotel booking sites and work in your favor. If you do work with one of those booking sites, like a hotels.com or Travelocity, Priceline, what I suggest is round it up in all one bunch and use one site like kayak.com or HipMunk, HipMunk.com. And those are aggregators where they pull up all the prices and you can see which one is the best one that's out there. So a few tips. I got a few more if you got the time.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we'll just let Neil go until next week because we really don't have time to have both of you. It wouldn't be fair. Each of you would only have a few minutes, you know, 2 or 3 minutes.
You sure? I don't mind.
No. We'll just stay with you and we'll apologize to Neil and hopefully we'll pick it up next week. That's all. No problem. Professional radio. Do not try this, or semi-professional radio. Do not try this at home.
Well, I appreciate that, and we'll catch him next week. But a few other tips I have for you while we're on the air now. There's a zillion travel sites and newsletters that are out there. Some of my favorites, there's one called smartertravel.com, not to be confused with Smart Travel, which is another one, but I like Smarter Travel. That one, it's a daily, when you sign up for the newsletter, it comes out daily, but there's a lot of tips in there of whether it's cheap flights or great hotel rooms or really unique parts of town that you might not consider in a particular city staying at. For me, it's just a really great resource.
Great, okay.
So
and what is that again?
Getting involved with those.
What is that again?
It's called Smarter Travel, all one word, smartertravel.com.
Great. And so give me an actual example. Okay, so I want to go to New York City for the weekend. You know, two nights. Mm-hmm. So I go on travelsmarter.com. What is it going to actually, you know, hopefully, ideally, what's it going to do for me?
Well, it's just an information resource, but a lot of times when a hotel has a special that's running, they will shoot it over to smartertravel.com, and by and large, the people who are subscribers will get that information first. An example, one of my favorite go-to hotels in New York City is the Hilton in the Fashion District. And every once in a while, you might see that property listed and they might have like a $99 a night special. And in New York City, that's a steal, you know, especially in the summertime when hotels are running, you know, $300-$400 a night.
Right.
So it takes a little research on your part to see what's out there, but it can really pay off in the long run.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Because I actually have a question, and it's about something I thought we were going to talk about, which is when you said about tips. I thought, because we talked about restaurant tipping in the past, but what about, what about hotel tipping? What's the, you know, an acceptable tip for housekeepers?
So for housekeepers, typically they say it's $3 to $5 a day. And you really want to tip the housekeeper, not only because it's a nice thing to do, but especially if you check in on, say, a Monday, chances are the housekeeper that you have for that day is going to be your housekeeper for the next several days. You never know that.
Right.
But still, they're more apt when you give them that tip to really give that little extra detail to your room. They might leave you a few extra chocolates on the pillow, that sort of thing. Plus, it's a nice thing to do. Okay. Of course, your concierge, you want to tip that your concierge as well. My hotel concierge friends don't like me to say this, but you don't have to tip them for every single thing they say or do. If they're getting you a taxi, even though they want the tip, that's what they're there for.
Right.
You know, it's really more of that.
But if they move things around to get you two tickets to a hot concert or something is real, you know, when they kind of go above and beyond.
Well, yes, that's a whole radio segment upon itself.
Really?
Maybe we
okay.
Can
well,
talk
let's
about that
let's let's do that. Okay, if that's the case, I would love to.
God, the markups that they're getting for tickets.
Right.
You know, it's
obscene.
We'll save that
okay.
for the next test.
Okay.
But I do have here, Chuck, is something else I really suggest. If you have a favorite staff member, like a front desk clerk or a concierge, you can use that person as a conduit toward getting preferred rates. And then, you know, like I have a great contact right here in Center City, Philadelphia. That person gets my clientele a friends and family rate at their particular property.
Mm-hmm.
But what I always suggest is do something in return for them. I mean, they're being really nice. Yeah, you can tip them when you get there, but something that I always found when I worked for hotels that was the best tip I ever received was when they would just send me something out of the blue, maybe a bottle of wine or a gift basket.
Right.
When I wasn't thinking of them and they weren't in front of me, and when I received that, I got wedding gifts from some of
wow.
my guests back in the day.
Right.
And to me, and I still have them around, you
nice.
Know, the Ouroboros candy dish that's there on my living room table.
Sweet.
It came from a guest.
Huh.
I can't remember his name anymore. It's been so long, but
right.
it's that kind of thing that really
yeah.
gets you recognized, gets you the great rate in the future, and means the world to that particular
great.
Person.
All right. I think this is a good place. Unfortunately, we have to cut it off and move on to our special guest, Alan Rawls from the Motel Museum, Ken Allen. He is the restaurant critic for Mainline Today, and of course, he is the last word in the hospitality industry, not only locally but really around the world. He's does travel a lot, and he recommends as a concierge. He has to keep up on things, so he's the go-to guy. So we thank him each and every week for being with us, Kenny. Thanks, man, and we'll pick it up next week.
Always a pleasure. You got it, Chuck. Take care,
and we'll be back on the Motown scene after this.
Help us out now. The sound you've always known.
Yeah.
The music that's endured the test of time. Live, Creedence Clearwater Revival legends Stu Cook and Doug Cosmo Clifford. Together, they're Creedence Clearwater Revisited. Friday, June 30th, 9 p.m., the Event Center at Sugar House Casino. Tickets are on sale now at sugarhousecasino.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Creedence Clearwater Revisited.
Hey, you know what time it is. It's time for me to tell you about the Kibitz Room at the Holly Ravine Plaza of 100 Springdale Road in Cherry Hill. The Kibitz Room serves the Delaware Valley's best traditional Jewish-style food and everything, from their to-die-for hot corned beef, hot pastrami, and brisket, to their best-in-the-business Knishes Kugel and matzo ball soup. It's completely homemade and absolutely amazing. So whether for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner, and any and all of your catering needs, you know what to do. You go see my buddy Neil Parrish and that wacky crew of his. Only at the Kibitz Room at the Holly Ravine Plaza, 100 Springdale Road in Cherry Hill. Call them at 856-428-7878 or find them at greatpastrami.com.
Yeah.
That, of course, was a little taste of My Girl by The Temptations, one of the countless standards released by Motown Records. We played it because we are currently in a Motown mood. Tonight, the Broadway hit Motown the Musical opens a two-week run at the Academy of Music. And rather than have someone from the production on today's program, we decided to focus instead on the history of the legendary record label by inviting Alan Rawls to spend a few minutes with us. Mr. Rawls is a member of the Board of Trustees and in charge of museum preservation of the Motown Museum, which is located in the same building that once housed Hitsville, USA, the recording studio where Motown founder Berry Gordy and his team of musical geniuses, including Smokey Robinson, the songwriting team of Holland, Dozier & Holland, and the musical unit known collectively as the Funk Brothers, created what was known back in the day as, quote, the sound of young America, unquote. Alan Rawls, welcome to that showbiz.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here. And hello to all my friends in Philadelphia.
Which I'm sure you have many, or of which you have many, to put it, I think, grammatically correct.
Yes, I do.
Anyway, so let's start with the history of the museum. How and when did it come about?
Well, the museum, as you said before, was the original studio for Hitsville, USA. The building was actually purchased by Berry Gordy back in 1959. The studio was downstairs, and there was an apartment upstairs where his family actually lived. And so those are two of the things that you'll actually see when you come to the museum. He purchased that building and began the recording studio there, converted what was the garage and the kitchen into the control room and the studio itself. And then as the company grew, he purchased additional properties or homes. They're all single family or what we call in Detroit two-family flat residences adjacent to each other on West Grand Boulevard, which is a street that we're located on,
right,
and connected a couple of them. And that's what the museum is today. So between 1959 and 1972, Motown operated primarily out of those facilities. And that's where all of the major hits, the Motown Golden Era, were recorded.
And when talk a little bit about, though, the conversion to the museum.
Yeah. So the museum was the brainchild of Mr. Gordy's eldest sister, Esther Gordy Edwards, who was a senior vice president of the company and also the family historian. She had a knack of saving just about everything that came through our doors, in addition, of course, to the recordings, letters and papers and photographs, telegrams from Dr. Martin Luther King or some other important people of the day. And after Motown moved to L.A. in 1972, she decided she wanted to stay in Detroit because she loved the city so much. And they just opened a marketing and public relations office in that facility. So she operated out of there. And then one day, there was a group of British sailors who wanted to see Motown, and she looked out of her window, and what she thought was the entire British Navy standing on the front lawn. And so she opened our doors, just walked them through. It wasn't a museum at the time;
sure.
It was just
an office,
just office space. And after she gave the tour, she called Barry in Los Angeles and said, I think we made history and didn't even know it. So she began creating a museum, which was founded in 1985, and we're a state historic site.
Great.
At this point. And it comprises the original Hitsville, USA, and the building that's directly next door that's all connected to that makes up the museum as it stands right now.
Right. And
we can talk about expansion a little while,
sure,
if you want to,
yeah,
also.
Sure. But right now, I'd like to know,
go ahead.
How much of the focus is on the music and the artists that created it, And how much is on the bigger picture in terms of the role Motown played both in the empowerment of African-American business people and race relations in the 1960s?
Well, there's quite a bit of both. Obviously, when you've got some of the greatest recording artists of all time, Supremes, Attempts, Four Tops, Marvin Gaye, Stevie, and all the rest of them, there's quite a focus on them individually and how that made up the Motortown Review and the traveling that was made not only in places like the Apollo, but down south as well. So there's a story to tell about that, on how they how the music helped to break down racial barriers. There's also an aspect of Motown in the civil rights movement when you think of Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech.
Right.
That original speech was made in Detroit on June 23rd, 1963, and Mr. Gordy recorded it and had it distributed, as well as the Great March on Washington.
Right.
That was August of that same year. We also recorded Dr. King and a couple other other speeches, for example, Why I Opposed the War in Vietnam, as well as other black thought leaders of the time like Ossie Davis, then Bill Cosby, Stokely Carmichael, Amari Baraka, and several others on a label that was known as Black Forum that existed in the late 60s to the early 70s. Langston Hughes was another artist that recorded on it. And that was primarily spoken word.
Right.
But it offers an interesting slice of what was being discussed in that era of American history as well as African American history. So we have an exhibit on that as well. So we also try to focus on, you know, the bigger picture of Motown, as well as what impact it had in this country.
Right. So walk us through the museum for a minute or two, if you will. So we show up and walk through the door, mm-hmm. and what do we see in here?
Well, as you enter the museum, you're going to see a mural along one wall that has some of the Motown artists, and then we take you to the lobby, which illustrates that number of houses that I talked about, which was the original Motown Record Corporation, which we call the Empire on West Grand Boulevard. We have a short introduction there. We then show you a 15-minute introductory video that gives a lot of insight on Motown and its early days and as it grew. So there are interviews with people like Smokey, of course, Mr. Gordy, Martha Reeves, and also folks who you may not know of but are important to Motown, like DJs. Like obviously there were a couple of DJs in Philly, and their names escaped me. I think Georgie Woods maybe
Georgie
been
Woods,
one
right.
of them, but
yes.
I'm not sure.
And maybe Joe Butterball Tamburo.
Mm-hmm. DJs like that are also in that interview, as well as some of the other folks who were kind of behind the scenes in Motown in those days.
Right.
After that, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
Get a question?
No, that's okay.
Okay. Then we take you upstairs, which is our core exhibit when we talk about the entire Motown story. And there's a couple of special treats that you get there. You'll see and actually be able to use the original echo chamber that Motown used to help create and just kind of enhance some of the hits that we're all familiar with. So you'll get a chance to try that out yourself. Another really interesting part of the tour up there is Michael Jackson's sequin glove.
Great. I'm sure the that's glove. I'm sure everybody, you know, takes pictures of that.
Oh, Yeah, and also along with his hat is, excuse me, along with that glove is his hat.
Right.
One of those hats
the pork
that
pie.
He, you know, yeah, that he threw off.
Right.
That fedora that he was so famous for. Then you have a chance to see that apartment I talked about where the Gordy family actually lived in the first few years of Motown before they moved to more spacious quarters. Then you go downstairs to see the actual office, the lobby where the record company functioned, you know, the switchboard, all of those sorts of things that you might associate with a building of the early 60s. And it's just from a personal perspective, I was a teenager during that time and hung out in that lobby quite a bit during those days. And so it was really a place of electricity. And it was so accessible that you got a chance to interact and talk with, you know, with Smokey or the Four Tops or anybody else who was coming through there. Mr. Gordy wasn't a shy person in terms of being accessible to folks who stopped by.
Can I ask what brought you to the studio there, to Hitsville, when you were a teenager?
Well, like every other teenager who was growing up during that time, you somehow thought that you could be a part of Motown too.
just by
how
you
so,
well, and you are.
You know, we
you
had
go.
Our own singing group and wrote our own songs,
nice.
And so we had a couple of auditions at Motown.
What was the name of the group?
The Elegance.
The Elegance. I like it. Well, you are part of Motown, so it worked out after all.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. So.
But let me tell you the most important thing.
Oh, sure. I'm sorry.
You go through that office, and then you actually get a chance to see the original recording studio intact as it was in the 60s. You see some of the original instruments.
God. Wow.
As well as a piano, a Steinway concert grand piano that was restored by the good graces of Paul McCartney and Steinway.
Hmm. Well, I saw, I actually just saw last night on the internet that James Jamerson's bass is for sale.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
one of his basses.
Perhaps it may find its way to mm-hmm. Grand Avenue.
So, yes, we're always interested in collecting memorabilia of Motown artists, yes. And we have memorabilia, you know, in addition to Michael's glove and hat on display as well.
Right. Okay, well, we only have a few more minutes, so let's talk briefly about – there is a Motown Philly, with all due respect to Boys mm-hmm. to Men – There is a fairly significant connection between Motown and music in Philadelphia, right?
Oh yeah, I believe so. Yes. Well, obviously the first thing that would come to everybody's mind is the Spinners.
Yes.
You know, they were a great opening act when they were at Motown. I really loved them when they were a part of the regular Motown repertoire. And they left and then under Tom Bell, mm-hmm. I believe, Linda Creed, in that group, they had, you know, quite a few hits.
Right. But
I think
on a bigger level, larger, big picture level.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, I think that because of the way that Motown organically grew from, you know, a group of small writers that, you know, and musicians that joined together, I think of the same way with Gamble and Huff, you know, with Tom Bell and Linda Creed. And then you guys had, you know, some fantastic musicians in Philly also, like Norman, Dexter Wanzel, and folks like that as well. So you guys had your own kind of sound, actually, as well.
Well, but I was thinking more. But
it was distinctive, just like Motown was distinctive.
But would there have been a Sound of Philadelphia, Philly International Records, without the model created by Motown?
Well, I'd like to think that Motown was the trailblazer Absolutely. For that.
I think so.
I've heard Gamble and Huff say several times that they modeled their success after the way Motown built its company.
Yeah. And, Kenny,
and I forgot one last thing.
Go ahead.
You got the Jacksons.
Right. That's right.
Obviously.
Oh, right. That's right. Mm-hmm. The Jacksons who came to sing. Mm-hmm. And Michael, who recorded Off the Wall, I believe. Right?
That's right. So you got Sigma Sound. Right. That's kind of the bookend to Studio A.
Right. So, there is a connection there. Anyway, we're almost out of time. Mm-hmm. You want to speak just very briefly about the expansion at the museum before we go?
Oh, yeah, love to. So, as wonderful as our museum is, we get 60,000-70,000 visitors a year, and I'm not exaggerating. We would love to be able to display more of our collection and be able to greet more visitors. So we're building a $50 million expansion.
Wow.
We haven't started construction yet. We're in the design phase right now.
Great.
And what we hope to have is about 35,000 square feet of new exhibit space.
Wow.
The exhibit core, I'm exaggerating. It's the museum itself is about 35,000 square feet.
Right.
But the exhibit space itself is about 15,000 square feet. But we also intend to have other real exciting things like a 200-plus seat theater.
Oh, wow.
So that we can actually have live performances. We want to have a cafe so that, as guests come, there's a place to get some refreshments. And then even have live music in the evening.
Nice.
A new exciting part that we're adding is an education center as well.
Great.
Because Motown was also about education as well.
So we have to kind of wrap it up here. Assuming
sure.
everything goes according to plan, when can we expect mm-hmm. the doors to open? What's the target?
We hope to be open in 2019. Which is the 60th anniversary of Motown
perfect.
Records.
And for more information on the museum now, the Motown Museum, and I assume perhaps there might be something about the future, motownmuseum.org will give you everything you
That's
need.
Right.
And if you're anywhere in the Motor City area, I haven't been there, but, boy, I would love to go. It just sounds great. And we want to thank Alan Rawls from the Motown Museum for spending a few minutes with us today. Sir, thank you so much for your time, and great luck on the future plans there. Thanks again.
Sign up for a Rush Rewards card at Sugar House Casino, and you could earn up to $300 in same-day free play on your first visit. In enrolling, new Rush Rewards members receive $10 in free play guaranteed. Visit Rush Rewards for details. The all-new Sugar House Casino. More to love. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
And we are back. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Alan Rawls. And, yeah, I would love to check out the Motown Museum. It just sounds like a very cool place. And hopefully one day I will get to do that. But before I do that, I know definitely that I'm going to be talking to the one and the only A.D. Amorosi. You read him on Philly.com, The Inquirer, and The Daily News, Icon Magazine, Philly Weekly, on and on and on and on. And we are thrilled to have him here each and every week to talk about, well, mostly pop music and the local scene and what's happening, but anything he wants to, because he knows so much about so much. So what do you say, old man? What is she?
I say thank you for the great build-up. And I was listening to your Motown interview, very informative. You know, I don't think the Motown label's so hot.
You don't?
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding around.
It's no kill rock stars, but it's still, God, they've had a couple good tunes.
Right? Oh, you know, it's funny because I'm thinking of the fact that you were talking a lot about Philly. And the Hall & Oates Fogey Nation thing was this weekend.
Yeah. I assume you went? Yes?
I did, and it was massively successful. Definitely a sellout. And I have to
Hold it. When you say definitely a sellout, you mean the number of people, not some sort of commercial sacrifice to art, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, if selling out it has anything to do with, you know, hoagie sponsorship, then yes. And that was good. That was good. Just people, you know, walking in. I wouldn't want to be quoted on the number, but the first so many people walking in the door got, you know, hoagies.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, what could be better?
And it was Saturday, which was the only half-decent day of the weekend, so.
Right. Yeah, the weather definitely smiled on us.
Yeah.
So it was a nice time, and I'm anxious to see who Live Nation and Hall & Oates pull in for the next festival. We talked a little bit about this last week, but, you know, I guess everyone's fingers were crossed as to how well it was going to do. So this is definitely a go for next year.
Right. And that's really nice that, you know, that Hall & Oates, because, you know, it's funny, I was having this conversation literally about right before the show went on with Sam Spicer, who runs the station here, and we were talking about Hall & Oates and acts coming out of Philly, and, you know, we said that, well, yes, they identify themselves as Philadelphians, but they did not break out of Philadelphia. They did not spend...
Yeah, they broke out of New York.
Exactly, yeah. They did not spend, you know, two or three years in the clubs here creating a following that, you know, translated. So in that respect, they're not really a quintessential Philly band. You know, like, say, the Hooters back in the mid-'80s were, because they, you know, they did it that way.
Or, like, this weekend's highlight is the Roots,
who
did make their initial success out of selling, and are, you know, the titular stars of their the Roots Picnic, the 10th anniversary event, at the same place, Festival Pier, June 3rd, even though Pharrell Williams and Lil Wayne and Beyonce's sister Solange will be part of the act, the biggest, I think for me, and I think for anyone who has been part of the Roots history, the biggest part of the event will be their reunion with Scott Storch, who was their very first keyboardist over 30 years ago. And for the uninitiated, Scott Storch went on to write and produce so many hits for Beyonce, for Fat Joe, for Paris Hilton, for Brandy. I mean, the amount of songs that he has produced and written, is absolutely amazing. And, you know, I'm pretty sure he doesn't play a whole heck of a lot of keyboards anymore. So to have him here for this, that alone is worth the price.
And I don't pretend to be an expert on the career of Scott Storch, but I do know, if I remember correctly, that a few years back, he had some pretty rough times
that he went through. Yeah. Look, he will not be the first or the last pop star to make a lot of money and spend more money.
Right, than he made, right.
You know, apparently he likes, you know, fast cars. He likes fast women. He likes fast everything. So that's...
My point being that it's nice that this guy apparently maybe is back in the biz, though.
Definitely sounds, from the pop scuttlebutt, he's definitely looking to, you know, he's a more quiet, more subtle presence on the scene right now. So I guess, you know, he's starting from base level, playing keyboards. It'll be great to see him. And, you know, remember, everyone who attended Festival Pier this weekend, it is, you know, the entire several parking lots, three or four stages.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a nice, good, long day for everyone.
Right. We only have a couple of minutes. I want to at least talk about one show coming up. But I got to say, the guys in the Roots, man, they make James Brown look like a real slacker.
In terms of,
I mean, I went to Portland a couple of weeks ago to visit my daughter. And I flew in very late Saturday night. And, like, one of the first things when she picked me up at the airport was Questlove was in Portland doing some sort of DJ gig.
I mean,
it's like, you know, amazing how hard these guys work.
He did a prom in upstate Pennsylvania, I think maybe Friday night. A prom.
Jeez.
He's a DJ at a prom. Okay, fine. I think that's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
Black Thought, who is the mouthpiece rapper, because they work on the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, he has developed his comic chops.
Right.
He now has a night at Punchline.
Yes.
I should say this. He is going to be doing his, on June 2nd, a special Punchline with J.B. Smoove from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Right.
I almost forgot about that. Yeah. So that alone, that's going to be a
God bless him.
Final.
It's amazing. Anyway, we got less than a minute. So, and what's the show of the week for coming up? Anything?
The show of the week, really? Okay. June 5th. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds Electric Factory. Nick Cave is one of, not just Britain's most dramatic, most literate performers. He is, the spiritual son to Leonard Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
And the show is not sold out.
Hmm.
So please, I implore anyone out there who cares about theatrical, literate, rock music to get thee to Electric Factory on the 5th.
Great. And on that note, we will end it this week. A.D. Amorosi, as always, thanks so much. Always great to talk to you, my friend. And
thank
we'll do
you.
It again next week.
Got it.
And we're going to just keep right on rolling because we welcome back after a week hiatus. We welcome back our movie lady to close things out, as she always does so wonderfully. Lee Ann Lindsay, Tinseltine.com. Tinsel and Tine, right? Tinseltine. Now I forget.
Tinselandtine.com.
Right.
Right. And it is great to be back. We had a very dreary Memorial
Weekend
weather.
Especially if you're involved in the production of Baywatch, apparently.
I was thinking, here on the East Coast, and like you said, Saturday was almost okay, but Sunday and Monday were terrible. You would think that people would have gone to the movies in droves.
Yeah.
But it's been reported to be the worst total for the four-day holiday weekend in 18 years.
Really?
That sounds pretty bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had Baywatch out there, and, Dwayne The Rock Johnson is usually a pretty good draw. It's not a movie I wanted to see. I had, three chances to see it, and I was you wouldn't be able to tie it.
Proving that our contributors are so intelligent and have such good taste. Let me add that. I just think it's amazing that there were 9 credited writers on that movie. That's insane.
I think that is crazy. I do think that's funny. It's just like everybody just kept trying to fix it.
Yeah.
And then, Guardians is still out, and The Diary of a Wimpy Kid for the kids, and then Alien Covenant. But, what was supposed to do really well was Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Mm-hmm.
And it did take the top spot with, Johnny Depp back as Captain
Jack
Sparrow.
Well, something had to.
This is the 5th installment of this Disney franchise. But they're saying that, of the 4 before did much better opening weekend. But I mean, $77 million doesn't sound that terrible to me. But
it compared, it probably costs about $250 million to make, right?
Yeah,
but they'll get it back.
They'll get it back overseas. I mean, I kind of lost interest in this series after the second one, to tell you the truth. It just never really hooked me. This one had a lot of holes in the plot for me. Like, whether or not you'd seen them all, just this particular one of them trying to find Poseidon's trident, there's a lot of things that didn't work. But, it's IMAX and it's good visuals. But what I'm more intrigued about is the fact that Johnny Depp supposedly is in debt. Have you heard this?
No. He owes me $5, but I mean, I didn't realize it was worse than that.
He's supposedly suing his management company because he's out of money and he thinks it's their fault. But they said that he spent $3 million to blast Hunter S. Thompson's ashes
right.
out of a cannon.
Right.
And then $18 million on a 150-foot yacht. That sounds like a lot even for a yacht. And then he had a failed record label, and he spent $300,000 a month on wine. I would love that. $30,000 on
wine. Okay, that reminds me of the old joke. The guy who says, tells a younger man, he says, I spent 90% of what I made millions, and 90% of it I spent on women, booze, and gambling, and the rest of it I wasted.
And the rest of it he wasted. I like that. Well, Johnny Depp can appreciate that. I mean, I used to really, really love him, and then, between the divorce and then the Amber Heard domestic abuse and
right.
now hearing about this, it's kind of dampened him in my eyes, but.
But he's still, but that does not dampen the fact that he is still a major talent as an actor. And
he is a major talent.
Right.
He is. That's what really
He's the star of three of my favorite movies that I will watch over and over again. Well, let's see. There's Ed Wood. There's Blow. And there's, and speaking of Hunter Thompson, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, which is really one of my favorites because it's probably my favorite book of all time. And for decades, I would read that book, and this was before they made the movie. We're talking about like the 70s and 80s. And I would think to myself, because most of the time when you love a book and they make it into a movie, you're always disappointed because they change so much.
Yeah.
And I always thought to myself, if they ever make this book into a movie, the book can be the shooting script. They don't have to change or add or subtract. And pretty much Terry Gilliam, who directed it, 98% of the book is in that movie. It's amazing how faithful they are to it.
That's interesting to know. That's one that I haven't seen.
Oh, well,
it's
a crazy movie. I mean, it's not for everybody, but if you're a Hunter Thompson fan, especially a fan of the book, it is a brilliant movie. It's just hilarious.
One for the list.
Yeah, there you go. So what's opening this week?
We had a movie that had your name written all over it. Chuck, had you heard about this one?
Yes. It's a movie I actually want to see. It's one of the few movies that I hope to see.
You should go see this. You will love this. I mean, it had a soft opening a couple weekends ago, but it expanded to more theaters over the holiday weekend. And for anybody who doesn't know, it's about the Bayonne leader, who's a
Chuck
heavyweight
Wepner.
Boxer
right.
in Bayonne, New Jersey in the 70s, called Chuck, his real name is Chuck Wepner,
right.
And he's most famous for going 15 rounds against Muhammad Ali, and he was the inspiration for Sylvester Stallone to write Rocky.
Yep.
So he was in Philly for the premiere here, and in fact, if anybody wants to see it, the whole Q&A is posted to Tinsel and Tine.
Oh, okay.
And what he said was that, if he was going to have his real story told, he wanted to make certain there was no sugarcoating, that it was, the good and the bad was all told. And the bad really consists of him, he cheats on his wife quite a bit. And then there's some drug use and some selling of narcotics, for which he did a short stint in prison. But he's really just so kind of transparent and lovable and kind of childlike in his loud, brash ways. He's played by Lee Schreiber from the show Ray Donovan.
He's a great actor too.
So good.
Yes.
And this role was just sort of made for him. He really pulls it off well. And, it's a good movie to see. I mean, the sad part is that the Chuck Wepner himself has not made one dime off of the Rocky franchise.
Right.
Even though,
although he did sue,
didn't
he sue and they settled? Didn't he get a little something from Stallone?
It's actually still in process.
Oh, really? I thought that had been settled
after all this time. No, and he had his producer there, and they're like, saying that Stallone approved of the script and the depiction of him in this film, but they're still within.
Right.
They're still,
definitely worth seeing. We only have about 30 seconds, so what's up this week?
In theaters this Friday, Captain Underpants, the first epic movie. Kevin Hart is, who was really funny as the Bunny Rabbit in last year's Secret Life of Pets. He's lending his voice again to another animated movie. I gave away tickets to that one over the weekend, but I was too lazy to get out of bed on Saturday to go see it because it was a 10 a.m. screening. And what I'm really excited about is I see Wonder Woman tonight, starring Gal Gadot, and Chris Pine, of course, as Steve Trevor, who for me will always be, you know, Lyle Wagner and Linda Carter.
Right.
But
right.
I am still excited, no matter
right.
what. I even have an outfit for it.
Nice. And hopefully we'll talk a little bit about more about it next week. Leanne Lindsay of Tinsel Tine, TINE.com. Go there for free screening passes. You don't have to pay for see all the big movies. You get to go for free, and you get to go before everybody else does. So too cool. And you learn about other things that are going on in town, both in the movie world and the food world, too. So please check her out there. And a big hug and a kiss to Aunt Nucky, and we'll see you next
Thank
week.
Thank you. All right. See you next week.
Take care. Okay. Well, I'm glad to have Leanne back. She always brightens even the most dreary of days. And you know what? Speaking of brightening dreary days, well, good sandwich or a good breakfast even can get you started on a dreary day. And you know where I'm going with this, too. You want breakfast? Hey, Kibitz Room isn't just about deli sandwiches. They have challah French toast, babka French toast, cheese blintzes, blueberry blintzes, cherry and potato blintzes, omelets, eggs, Novan eggs, you know, Spanish omelet, ham and cheese omelet, pastrami, salami, bologna. You get my point that the Kibitz Room not only has the most amazing Jewish deli type food, but just real food, other food too. And if they're there, they're open every day. I believe they open around 7 o'clock every morning. So it's certainly early enough. Actually 9:30. I'm sorry. Now, why did I say 7:04? 9:30 a.m. So you get a late breakfast there. I'm so sorry there, Neil. I should know that. Anyway, 9:30 in the morning, get some breakfast. Always good no matter what time you go. And that is, of course, the Kibitz Room at the Holly Ravine Plaza, 100 Springdale Road in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Call them at 856-428-7878 or find them at greatpastrami.com. Yeah. Well, another hour has zipped by. And I hope you enjoyed everything. I want to thank my special guest today, Alan Rawls of the Motown Museum in Detroit. And, of course, we had him on in honor of tonight's opening, a 12-day run at the Academy of Music, if I'm not mistaken. I should know that. But for some reason, I'm drawing a blank, but where else could it be? But look it up. You know, I'm sure you'll find it. But it is, if you're a Motown fan, yeah, it's a must-see. And as opposed to, as I told you at the beginning of the show, Saturday Night Fever at the Walnut Street Theater, which is an absolutely must-not-see. But have fun in Motown. And I'm not real sure what we're going to have on next week. So you can always check us out, though, on Facebook again. That's showbizradio.com. And probably by next Monday, you'll see who will be on next Tuesday's show. It could be somebody very big, very famous. We're working on that. So we will see what we will see. Thanks of course, my producer, Brett Kronberger in Mission Control, keeping us on the rails. And our regulars, unfortunately, Neil couldn't make it with this week. And when he did, it was a little too late from the call-in. But that's okay. We forgive him. And Ken Allen and A.D. Amorosi and Leanne Lindsay. And thank you for listening. And let's see, as you go through this craziness called life, always remember, hey, that's showbiz. Ethel, take us home.
There's no business like show business, like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling.